Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 339th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I am a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver.
And I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and a professor at the University of Alberta in Edmonton.
So, Mike, Beatles, 1967.
All you need is love. But they misspelled what they were really after, which is...
Well, they dropped the G.
They dropped the G. They didn't, well, no, they it was didn't a, feel it was that a, it would have the same ring.
Yeah, it was a silent G.
Like the P in pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those of you working that out, haven't heard that joke, you're one of 2 or 3% that haven't heard that. So we're going to talk about gloves today. And do you need to use sterile gloves for kind of minor procedures that you might do in the emergency or the office? And this is obviously a relevant issue because of the cost.
And we have to explain the Beatles thing.
Yes, because, first of all, we'll deal with two kind of tools for practice. One older one that has been updated within the last 6 months or so. And then one that we've written within the last 6 months. And that was done with Ezekiel Steve, who is Zeke, and he is a resident on the Vancouver Island program. He approached me. They have like many residency programs, they have research projects to do. And so he approached me about possibly doing one. His preceptor is Dr. David Kenny, who I know quite well, has been a good friend for years. So we got hooked up, and Zeke wanted to do a project on sterile gloves for minor office procedures. And this just combines well with one of my older tools for practice, so dating back to 2009, but as I said, updated. So, and he came up with his brilliant title of "All You Need Is Glove."
And there you go, Beatles. That was the very circuitous way to get to it, but that's
it was, yeah, yes. Yeah. But we'll do anything for even a hint of a joke.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about these. So, first of all, when you're dealing with lacerations, do you need to use sterile gloves for simple lacerations in the office? So this isn't complex ones or large ones or that kind of thing, but these are simple lacerations that would occur in the emerge, or even in primary care clinics. So this was a randomized control trial of 816 immunocompetent patients. You'll see that in all these studies, they stick to immunocompetent patients as enrollment criteria. And they included anyone over age one. And it was done in Canadian emergencies. And they simply compared latex-free sterile gloves versus, and they were all latex-free, versus non-sterile gloves. So the traditional now blue gloves that you find in most offices. And this was for suture repair. And then they looked at infection rates at different times. The key endpoint was infection rate at 23 days. Had at any point they been classified as having an infection? And the sterile glove rate was 6% versus non-sterile gloves was 4.3%. That wasn't statistically different and certainly wasn't even going in the wrong way.
I was going to say right way, but it depends which way you talk.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But going in the wrong way, yeah.
It wasn't going the wrong way, so it was going the right way. So it looks very positive that you didn't need, and this is an RCT, so of course it kind of is the dominant article, and it was well-designed, large study. So the next question you have, I'm sure, James, is what else do we have to support this other than one good RCT? That's what we go on sometimes, but still would be nice to have some other evidence.
You read my mind.
I know. That's why we work so well together.
Sure.
or it might be the diazepam.
Yes, and the retrograde amnesia.
Exactly. Two older studies, one of 50 patients and one of 408 patients done in the 80s, actually, and I'm not even sure they were randomized. It's very hard to determine if randomization really occurred, but they compared no gloves to sterile gloves. Mm-hmm. And they found infection rates didn't differ. Now, This is not a recommendation to use no gloves. There's lots of reasons why that is not appropriate, bloodborne infections being one of the primary ones. But it does suggest that sterile gloves for these minor kind of lacerations is perhaps not necessary.
Typically, what would you see? Like, I haven't been in the emergency room for years, for personal or non-personal reasons. What's normally done there?
Well, for years, it was very heavily pushed to use sterile gloves for all of these things. And of course, you know, once the skin is cut, now many clinicians have changed. And we are seeing changes in the use. And so, you know, this is not a... Because the big study that I quoted earlier came out in 2004, we've been seeing a gradual drop in the use of sterile gloves for these kind of minor lacerations. But certainly the protocol is always kind of to overdo it and then us to evaluate how much do we actually need to be very strict about these kind of things. And we are seeing a slow loosening of that. And originally it was lacerations. And lacerations kind of made sense because when people are coming in, they've already taken their unclean skin in the sense that it's not sterilized and got a laceration to it. So it's embedded with all of the bacteria and that would be on their skin or whatever also poke through their skin. And so it was thought that, well, maybe if that's already occurred, then sterile gloves is overdoing it. But it did lead us to the question of, well, what about for minor procedures in the office? So punch biopsies, small excisions, those kind of things.
Right.
And I think that was an excellent kind of logical next step. And so we've actually have some research on that as well, looking at minor excisions. So the best trial that's most relevant for us in primary care was an Australian primary care RCT of just shy of 500, 493 patients, mean age 65, getting excisions of about a 2-centimeter lesion, and about a third of them were on the head and neck, which is what you might expect because a lot of these you're removing for and sending off for risk of cancer. And the infection rates for the patients who had the procedure done with non-sterile gloves was 8.7% versus 9.3% with the sterile gloves. Again, not statistically different, but if anything, going a positive direction, suggesting that there's no need for the sterile gloves. So, you know, we're stuck a bit because that's the only RCT. Fortunately, it is from primary care. There's of just kind of minor excisions. There is an RCT, and again, it was even smaller, but it was of Mohs procedure. So Mohs, for those of you who can't recall, that's where it's a cancer is being excised, and margins are close, but they send them off to look for cancer right there in the cells, and then they kind of map out the lesion, and if there's cancer at one margin, they will extend that margin and slowly excise it. So they're only taking out what they absolutely have to. Now, Mohs is different for that reason, but also because they're changing gloves all the time. So the question here is it safe in Mohs procedures? So there's a small RCT of this of 60 patients, mean age 73, and the excision size around the same, about 2 centimeters. But the vast majority on the head and neck, because that's where you would focus on Mohs. You want to be careful not to remove as much tissue. And what they found was the non-sterile gloves had a 3% infection rate versus a 7% in the sterile gloves. That wasn't statistically significant and might have exaggerated that difference, the numeric difference, because the sample size is so small.
No, right, yeah. So, I mean, it's fairly convincing evidence. I mean, it's not, you know, and these are such useful studies in my mind. We will probably talk about it, but these are sort of, they should be practice changing. Would you not agree? I mean,
oh, because for sure. These are,
we don't have that. We didn't have evidence in the first place to do it. We think this is a good idea, but that doesn't always work.
Yeah, for sure. And these are, you know, it's kind of like that study we often use for presenting, James, to kind of talk about belief systems. And you're the one that found the study, I believe, the suppository study, mm-hmm, of which direction you put a suppository in. And it seems like such a you think, oh my God, how could that ever be published? It's so ridiculous. But these are key, simple little things that we do all the time in the care of patients, and yet we never really have examined what the right way to do it is.
Yeah, and just in case people are wondering what the heck we are talking about, it's about how do you insert suppositories? Do you know, and if you ask most people, they would say, and in fact, if you look at all of the
directions.
The directions, it says you insert it with a tapered end, and you can give numerous reasons why you think that might be the best.
I think it's because it's shaped like a torpedo.
Well, that is the reason. Because it was commonly, you know, that commonly occurred back in, you know, the Second World War.
Exactly.
Yeah. With torpedoes. The extraction. Now, I don't know if you need to use gloves to extract a torpedo? I don't think so.
I don't know. Well, yeah.
Sterile gloves.
I think you leave the torpedo. It's not a matter of extraction. It's only placed.
Yeah. We digress. But anyway, so there was a study done in Lancet showing that it's actually easier to insert it if you insert it the other direction, and you actually have and it comes out less often, so easier to use. But what was really, I had sort of some follow up data on that, where I know people have tried to suggest that we should change what we do, and the complexity of changing a guideline like that. I remember reading an article where they said, yes, it makes a lot of sense. We should actually, you know, turn the suppository around and, you know, insert it the way that the best trial shows it is the best way to do it. And they said, well, we can't do that unless we have an entire, unless the NHS changes its policy on this. And they talked about legal issues. And they talked, it was unbelievable. And you kind of go, boy, if you cannot change the direction of how you insert a suppository without some sort of a national policy, it's no wonder.
We have no hope for
A1C. Yeah, it's no wonder. Yeah, that trying to change or, you know, steer the boat into a different direction for things like lipids and glucose. But anyway, so that's what that was. And it, even though it intuitively we thought it makes sense, it doesn't always work. And this is another great example of that.
Right, right. So what are we left with? Well, we're left with some cohort studies after that, which generally overall support what's being recommended here. So, for example, there were 3,000 simple excision procedures done, and the infection rate with non-sterile gloves was 1.7 versus 1.6. Now, remember, when we're talking about cohort studies, these patients may well be selected for non-sterile gloves because they're felt to be lower risk. So that's why the RCTs will still trump them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a 420 patient reconstructive flap procedures that did show higher infection rates of about 15 versus 2%. So that is important, though, I think, and it does, because many of the complex ones were not done in the RCTs, so this we have to fall back to this for the complex procedures. Mm-hmm. And there was a retrospective one done in primary care that found that infection rates were about 2.5% for non-sterile gloves, but they didn't even report sterile gloves. And the same is true in the looking at the kind of cohort studies of Mohs procedures. There's been a couple. One really big one did find a very tiny difference. Again, this is for Mohs procedure, and again, it's in a cohort study. So about a 0.5% infection rate difference. And there may be reasons within the study that led to that difference, which the authors acknowledge. So overall, I think it's the best available evidence suggests that, which is RCTs and then some support from cohort studies, that for minor procedures that are technically not complex or anything like that, then the utility of using sterile gloves over non-sterile gloves is just not there.
Right. And they are quite a bit more expensive.
Yeah, in fact, so the different studies, many of them report on the cost differences, and they vary between 3.5 to 6 times more expensive for sterile over non-sterile gloves. And you can imagine for procedures where, you know, this is something we do a lot, it's accumulating a lot of additional costs that are unnecessary to the system and to the clinicians who are doing them if they're running their own office for it. Or if it's if that cost is transferred onto the patient in some places, the it's just not reasonable to consider that. Now, if you're doing a complex flap procedure, then things change, and particularly one thing that was excluded from a lot of these were immunocompetent people, which I've mentioned, and then sebaceous cyst excision. So can I tell you with confidence that you can go ahead and excise sebaceous cysts without with non-sterile gloves? I can't say that, but I can say for minor procedures like punch biopsies, elliptical excisions, those kind of things, you're absolutely fine to use non-sterile gloves.
But you're not saying that there's evidence that you can't use.
Can't. No, I can't say there's no evidence either way is the problem. Yeah.
And I guess, I doubt that a patient would really know the difference. I mean, as long as you are wearing gloves, period, they're not going to really have an appreciation one way or the other. I doubt they're going to read the box and go, that's sterile or non-sterile or whatever.
Yeah. And if they did, they could be informed that the research shows that there is no evidence that there's actually, I hate that phrase. There's evidence. There's evidence that these are not, they don't cause any increased risk of infection.
Yeah. So, and just now earlier on, you were talking about, the sort of suture repair of lacerations, and we talked about whether or not you need to wear gloves, but do you want to just quickly comment?
Yeah, sterile gloves.
Sterile gloves. But obviously one of the key things that one needs to do is to clean out that laceration. I don't know if you want to go down that path with the...
So there's lots of neat little things that we're learning about managing kind of problems associated with wound care. So one of the things is when people come in with a laceration, we'll often try and syringe out the wound to make sure it's clean before suturing it up, and or even just swab it and wipe it with the swabs that have been in water. And of course, does it need to be sterile saline, or can it just be tap water? And this has been studied. A number of studies have been done on it. And the tap water has an infection rate of 4.4% versus saline at 6.7%. So again, not statistically different, but definitely not suggesting that sterile saline is safer. And the best, highest quality study in there is a 713-person study, and it did not find a difference either. It was a really well-done study. So here we are again for these simple lacerations. Just tap water is just as good as sterile saline, and again, you're looking at saving yourself and the patients, depending on how funding is done, some money or the system.
Yeah, and what you want is as good a irrigation as possible, especially for sort of puncture wounds and things like that.
Well, puncture wounds are tricky, right?
Absolutely,
they're very dangerous, and whether we suture them up, it's often the answer is no, because we're concerned about the embedded infection that's too deep to recognize. But certainly for like a larger laceration, a laceration that has anything in it, or you're concerned about that, you can certainly clean that up with just tap water. Is the best available evidence. Another little trick that we might want to mention is in excision studies, a lot of people will say to patients after they've sutured them, or even with lacerations, they'll say, you've got to keep these dry for a certain period of time. And there was another RCT showing that keeping wounds dry beyond 12 hours did not reduce infection rates. So all this worry about, well, you can't shower for, and I've never told patients this. I've actually told them the opposite, assuming this would be the case. But there were lots of people who would say you can't shower for 24, 48 hours or something. And for these kind of minor lacerations and repairs, there's no evidence that that's needed.
And I think the same thing applies to using things like topical antibiotics and all that sort of stuff. You just need to keep the area clean.
Yeah, well, in fact, with topical antibiotics, there's a lot of research and the reason that I apply topical antibiotics, and I'll even say this to the patients, is it's generally as an ointment so that when their wound crusts and dry, the gauze doesn't stick to it. That's one of its main purposes.
Yeah. So, but I think, in general, we should probably just avoid those. The topical antibiotic.
Now, you could use Vaseline. You could use anything to kind of prevent the... Some other little tricks is another study found that punch biopsies at 4 millimeters or less don't require suturing to because they won't change patient satisfaction or the appearance of the wound at 9 months. So there's really no need to suture them. And that when possible, we should be shifting to absorbable sutures so patients don't need to follow up because... repair with them has been found to be just as good.
Yeah.
So lots of little tricks out there for those of us who have been around long enough to know that we were supposed to use sterile gloves for everything, sterile water, tell people not to shower or wash the area for a day or two, suture every little punch biopsy, and use non-absorbable sutures. We've kind of gradually shifted a lot based on, as you said, practice changing kind of research.
Yeah, no, this is great stuff. I mean, and this is why I get a kick out of doing the sort of the evidence stuff that we do, is to go, isn't this cool? This makes life, in fact, easier. In fact, most evidence actually makes life easier.
Oh, for sure. That's what's crazy about...
I know.
When you're sitting on guidelines, it's almost like we look for ways to make things difficult.
Yeah, yeah. God forbid we would use common sense. Although I think people would say, well, it was common sense that got us to this in the place. It's common sense that you should use sterile gloves.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and obviously that comes back, you know, from years and years ago with, you know, when surgery used to be done without any sterile environment at all. And, you know, the post-infection, post-surgical rates were phenomenal and people died very, very quickly.
Oh,
and,
yeah. That great study looked at infection rates for delivery and deaths related to delivery, where the physicians were coming up from the autopsy suite and basically infecting all these women and their children.
Yeah, it was almost simply just washing their hands.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
the insanity of it. See,
don't talk to me about these crazy things, you crazy kids. But no, that's good stuff, Mike. So anything else you want to add to that?
No, I think that's it. We've learned that over time that for simple lacerations and minor kind of procedures like small excisions, that kind of thing, we really don't need to use sterile gloves. We can use the non-sterile gloves and infection rates will not differ.
Cool. So I think we'll just try and sell a few things. We've got the Best Science Medicine course coming up in Vancouver, April 7th and 8th. So we would encourage you guys to attend that and come and have some fun with us over a two-day course time in Vancouver. April is usually really quite nice, so we can't guarantee it, but we'll hopefully it'll be good weather, and certainly hanging around downtown Vancouver and Stanley Park and all that is a lot of fun, and the hotel that we have it at is very nice, if you would
exceptional.
Like, yeah, it's really a nice area and a good hotel. So if you want to come and join us, that would be awesome. And you can find all the information about that course on our website, therapeuticseducation.org. And you can sign up online. You can send checks. You can just deposit the money directly into my account.
Send small unmarked bills.
Yeah. just put them in my mailbox. So we would love it if you do that and continue to check out, obviously, all of these tools for practice, because these are, this is where you guys can actually have the information in your warm little hands. So check out all the tools for practice that are continued to be produced. Check out all of our tools and videos and stuff that are on our site. And anything else, Mike?
No, I think that's everything.
Okay, so thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.